CliffCentral.com.
I'm speaking to this morning someone called Jim Dean. Who, Jim, you're the managing editor or a senior editor of Veterans Today? Which one is it?
Both. I'm the managing editor, and Gordon's the senior editor.
Right, and I wanted to talk to you because someone brought it to my attention that Syria, which is such a mess at the moment, nobody can figure out which side is right, which side is left, which side we should be on the side of, which side we should be fighting. It's very complicated. Someone said to me, you're the guy to talk to. And you've brought along someone who you've dealt with before and somebody who you've had many conversations on television and on radio with, a guy called Gordon Duff. Gordon, welcome to you too. Is that music in the background?
It might possibly be, actually, yeah. We can stop that.
What's going on over there? It sounds like there's a carnival in your back garden.
Well, if I also have two pit bulls here. I mean, they could be doing this too.
Gordon Duff is a Marine combat veteran of the Vietnam War and a senior editor and chairman of the Board of Veterans Today. And both of you have been very critical of the U.S. military, its top commanders, and, of course, the executive branch. And the reason for your frustration is because you often see incompetence, but you also see a lot of disinformation. And you guys know what's really going on. So it must be frustrating as all hell for you to watch Syria and to know that all of this is not what all the rest of us think it is, right?
Well, this is Gordon Duff. I'm going to jump in on this. I've worked in over, let's say, the past four decades. It's now pushing five decades. As I was a young person in South Vietnam in the 1960s, mm-hmm. But I've worked in 80 countries, in a basis of clandestine services. I've worked in dozens of countries promoting U.S. policy over decades, including the one you're in right now. I have considerable experience, and we went through that off the air and are not going to do those things on air, so you can continue on air. It's that kind of world here. The Syria thing, I mean, I'm not blind about this. The Syrian government's corrupt. Mm-hmm. They're not corrupt like your government is. They're not even corrupt like Washington is, which is maybe the most corrupt government on earth.
Yeah,
this is actively right now, you know, if you catch our papers, but our FBI director was fired yesterday.
Yeah,
we have a maniac in the White House, and the U.S. is turning into a full-fledged police state dictatorship. And I don't toss those words around the same way others do. I'm not a comedian, although I'm beginning to think I might be. But with Syria, Jim went over there first. I sent Jim and a team for their to help supervise their elections, and then we sent teams over on two other occasions, including in the teams, a former CIA director came with us, who is one of my longtime friends. Mm-hmm. We've met with their top security officials, certainly government ministers. I've had a pretty good look at how they work, and it's a dysfunctional country like others. With this exception, President Assad is extremely popular. He's a liberal democratic leader. You know, it's a simple story there, basically. You've got a London-based ophthalmologist married to a former Rothschild bond salesperson. That's his wife. Mm-hmm. A liberal Western family that is forced to go to Syria and take over the family dictatorship.
Right.
He wants to, and that's what they do. I mean, that's, you know, be honest about it.
Yeah,
he would reform everything and turn this into a paradise, with one problem, and everybody's pretty much learned this: once you let up the least little bit, it comes piling down on you.
Where does that come piling down from? I mean, this is where I'm confused. So I know Assad. Okay. I know Assad. The Assad family have been there for a while. He inherited the country from his father, basically. A lot of people are saying he's gassing his own people. I don't know whether that's true or not. A lot of people are saying
not a word of that. Not a word of that. That's entirely fake news. I can tell you who did the gassing, and this will set you on your ear.
All right.
I can even tell you who planned to overthrow the government. if you were to go online and look for an innocent democratic organization that sounds like it's going to save the world, you could go to movements.org or even Human Rights Watch. You could go inside the Google organization and look at what used to be Google Idea Groups. Right now it's Google Jigsaw. Out of the intelligence services several years ago, we learned that an individual who worked as an assistant in clandestine services, and we're saying bombings and assassinations, for Condoleezza Rice, named Jared Cohen, left the Bush White House, was invited to Iran, and we have no idea how he got in the country, spent six weeks touring around Iran, left the country, went to Azerbaijan, the country to the immediate north, and within a few days of arriving there, assassinations of Iranian citizens became a daily, scientists in particular, nuclear scientists, defense people, even others, political leaders, a wave of assassinations. And from this, this brought Google Idea Groups on our radar.
Right.
That Google Corporation, in combination with Microsoft, Facebook, and others, run, and talk about the conspiracy theory you weren't expecting, run a massive mercenary and clandestine operations group directly tied to the U.S. State Department and to the British Home Office.
This is pretty, this is outrageous stuff. I mean, you know, to somebody who imagines that he has an understanding of the news, I don't know that this doesn't sound like conspiracy theory itself. What I'm confused by.
Oh, it goes beyond this. If you were to go to the Google, you should be confused. If you went to the website, and it's a massive website for Jigsaw Google.
Mm-hmm. Are these guys?
They recruit.
Are these like a clandestine organization themselves that do regime change and that kind of thing? I mean, this is Google. It's one of the world's biggest companies.
Yes.
And it looks like
it's not just Google. It's all the largest tech companies working with the U.S. State Department, and openly online, they are advertising for dissidents, whistleblowers. They're offering clandestine software to beat any intelligence agency. They are organizing get-togethers around the world, and they started this as early as 2008, where they are able to bring what they call reformed jihadists. These are people who have been on the no-fly list since day number one.
Yeah.
And they can fly them to London because the U.S. State Department handles their visas for them. What they're doing, in every nation in the world, they are taking over like a giant vacuum cleaner, the opposition press, the trade unions. They're taking over what used to be, well, frankly, used to be the job of the Central Intelligence Agency.
But hang on. Before we go any further, Gordon, I need to understand something. Let's just start with Syria before we bring in the agencies and the American involvement. So Syria is this country. As I understand it, there are a couple of parties involved here. There's the Assad government. There are rebels. Those rebels oppose...
Well,
Complete the picture as I know it. You can correct me as soon as I'm done. So there's the Assad government. There's some rebels. Then there's Islamic militants. I'm not sure whose side they're on. And then there's the Americans and the Russians. How do these guys fit together?
And the Iranians.
That's an interesting view. First of all, you take the most complex situation on Earth. If we were to take to and back to this mysterious group we're talking about, Google Idea Groups and movements.org or the Youth Alliance, which are fronts for. In 2014, Jim and I, with a few more VT staffers, my chief of staff is Colonel James Hankey, former attaché to Israel and former NATO intelligence chief, is one of our editors. Gene Khrushchev, who is currently a deputy Russian foreign minister, has been a VP editor for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So sometimes our guys, you know, drop dead of old age, and sometimes they end up in the center of governments. But we're a large organization, and pretty much all military and senior intelligence people, to the point where we are at the top of the pyramid for intelligence agencies, where, you know, it's potential that as many as five or six of the people with VT either ran national intelligence agencies or could have, even in the big countries.
Okay.
You know, which is, that's the level we work
at. But before we get to any of that, you got to explain to me where I'm wrong about Syria.
Well, it started by recruiting the rebels. The rebels were hired. Okay. Now, to hire them, they had to be selected. Right. And in order to select them, software was developed that would help screen the individuals out that would be adequately morally flexible to come on the payroll of primarily the intelligence agencies of the U.S., Israel, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, along with Qatar. And these are the countries that began and organized the war, the civil war, if you want to call it. Mm-hmm. They're the people that hired the initial rebels, which they hired out of Syria.
Okay.
So they created software, and this software was created, aided by Al Jazeera's news agency. They selected military leaders, they bought them, mm-hmm. and they pulled the trigger. Military leaders took their units, fled into Turkey. Overnight, the money began pouring in, millions of dollars to pay them off from Saudi Arabia. The Turkish government set up bases for them. A military program came in, and the rebels initially had full intelligence backing from the U.S. and Israel. They had on the ground help of every imaginable kind with their units.
Right.
Certainly clandestine air support, but they immediately seized considerable sections of Syria. Now, simultaneously, we had a similar situation beginning in Iraq as well, and they're not separate. But the Iraq organization that we know as ISIS, mm-hmm. was essentially formed the same way. ISIS came out of, and this is, if we go into this, you know, we don't have the time and no audience wants to hear it all. But when General Petraeus, former director of the CIA,
right.
was commander in Iraq, he was hired by the White House, essentially the Bush White House, to go in, pacify Iraq very quickly in 2005, so that the U.S. could stop the civil war there, mm-hmm. for just long enough in the remaining 2 years of the Bush administration to start a ground war with Iran based out of Iraq and conquer Iran.
All right.
In order to do this,
before we carry on, I need to understand something else quickly, because
the proxy war between Shia and Sunni is entirely a construct, okay. and a creation, and a typical conspiracy theory about that, with or without me, would say that the Zionists did it, a way of destroying Islam.
Right.
What you're going to have to accept here, you've got, there are varying layers. You'll be peeling the onion forever. Mm-hmm. But I've worked in intelligence for a very long time, as is Jim, and the world leaders as we know them, the majority of them, are only middle management in organized crime. If I were to take you to the U.S. Senate, for instance, sit down with some of my friends there in the lunchroom, and you actually got to meet with these people, you would find that people in the U.S. government in senior positions, some of them are so uniquely unqualified, you wouldn't let them fix your car. They're like people like Lindsey Graham, for instance, a powerful American senator. intellectually, this guy is a dullard. If he were a plumber brought in to fix your sink and you started talking to him, you'd immediately look at your watch and say, wait a minute, I have to go somewhere else.
Right.
These people are. It's frightening in real life. You know, you hear the stupid things they're telling the public, and you're thinking, well, they're really bright, powerful, erudite individuals who pander to the public by saying all of these stupid and childish things. No, they're actually subnormal, people of subnormal intelligence who've been placed as puppets in the government because they will do what they're told. They're generously rewarded. Some of these people, an awful lot of these people, aren't very nice. I mean,
they're also sociopaths. That's the main thing that they have in common. There's basically almost anything they won't do to have a little piece of the pie in the power and all the protection that they have.
So, Jim, since Jim has just come in now, Jim, who, if these people are just the middle management of global politics, who are the guys calling the shots?
The guys calling the shot are the masters of chaos. The folks that hate stability, that they've learned that peace is basically they can't hardly make any money under peace whatsoever. And having constant regime change, manufacturing more threats, they're in everything from being able to short markets, know what the futures are going to be on oil. They can blow up four or five pipelines in a two-week period of time and make hundreds of millions of dollars on oil futures. We're blowing up those pipelines may cost them $50,000 to maybe $100,000.
Right.
Some of these people are ex-intelligence agencies, and there's even one small country in the Mideast that does things like this to actually fund a lot of their operations.
Who are they? Who's this country?
It's called Israel.
Hmm. So is this the vast Zionist conspiracy? Is that what you're saying?
No, they're just players in it. And as Gordon, when he briefed me on this, Israel is just a base because all the money that the Israeli politicians raise to get elected, 90% of that is raised outside the country of Israel. So it's much, much bigger than that. But and to really capsulize it, you've heard of all the trillions of dollars that are in offshore bank accounts, illegal earnings that no taxes have been paid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's the people who own all of that money that are doing this. That's basically how big it is. And
let me jump in here. Gareth, what's frightening to some extent is that the patterns we've seen, and I could take myself back to, I was with the Ford Foundation in the 1970s for a while, and I'm an African specialist. You know, that's what I am educationally, other than an archaeologist, but that's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at, I can take a photo in my head of Africa in 1970. I had met many of the leaders of Africa when I was in my 20s still.
Right.
You know, I had a chance to do this. I was working with senior people. Anybody that came to the U.S., I mean, the Ford Foundation always would pick up their bills, and I was always with them. You know, it was one of the, I was the visible face, the young, likable sociopath. That was my job to be this. But I looked at how many people had electricity. I looked at life expectancy, clean water, toilets, those developmental things, those basic things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a relationship with the Nigerian government as a security advisor. Still, I'm contracted to them.
Right.
I sit on the board of the Defense Holding Company of Ghana and travel there regularly. I'm in and out of Ethiopia, Sudan, Kenya on a regular basis, and several times a year. So I'm in Africa on a regular basis, meeting with leaders there. And when we sit down and we look at where things were in 1970 and the trillions of dollars of resources that went in and out, the regime change, when we put the overlay of time over it, the Cold War and how much of that was fought supposedly in Africa. You saw it in, you know, Angola and Namibia. Yeah. You watch Rhodesia Rhodesia and Nyasaland turn into, you know, into Zimbabwe and Malawi and Zambia. You know, we watched all of this go on. But what we also thought we were going to see are maybe failed democracies, but we were going to see Nkrumah industrialized Ghana, for instance.
Right.
Instead, we are seeing wealth, corruption, but no electricity. I was at the inauguration of Goodluck Jonathan. You know, I had known
Nigeria,
him for 25 years. He used to be a driver for the governor there, and he was on my Skype list. So he'd be on with Jim and I, for years. He was always one of our guys. So he invited me in when he finally, you know, won an election. And I told him, you have 100 days here to make a difference. You know, and obviously he wasn't listening, but
yeah.
I sat in the presidential suite of the Transcon, and he would come in every night with Gordon Abua, who's now in prison, by the way, his chief of security.
Right.
And we have to deliver electricity to the north. We've got to deliver clean water. We've got to deliver hope. We have to have a plan to beat corruption. And if you don't do this and you have 100 days that people will back you, that the opposition will back you, that you can show what you're made of. Now, if instead I had told him, well, what we need to do are buy some expensive aircraft and start opening foreign bank accounts, you know, I think whatever I actually said, I think that's what he heard, because that's all he really did. And it's this way over and over again.
So, I mean, what I understand then is that...
Well, this idea that Jim brought up here of this chaos, entropy,
yep,
that human suffering as a business, why so many people of power would be utterly untouched by this. And at that really base level, and it's not just liberalism where you see a kid and you give him a candy bar and hope he's okay while you shuffle off. That's the typical American liberal. Now, there is a concerted effort worldwide that conflicts within this in this planet. There are government players, but we've seen this with, and governments are now openly admitting this. They call them non-state actors, that ISIS is a non-state actor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know ISIS to be, and this is not conjecture, and by this time, I'm not going to surprise anybody. ISIS is a creation of a number of intelligence agencies. ISIS receives military support, intelligence, even air support from the United States.
And satellite support. Yes.
They get intelligence the U.S. never gets. They are the magicians of it's like Rommel is running them sometimes, but they're military magicians. Can you imagine this, Gareth? Jim and I were talking a little earlier here, but when we were in Syria, we met with the Minister of Justice, the previous Minister of Justice. He just lost his job a couple of weeks ago. But they were holding people from 65 countries. Now, the last time I flew into the United States, the FBI wanted to talk to me for about 5 hours. And I'll tell you some of this. This, and you, as Jim says, you just can't make this stuff up. The FBI wanted to talk to me because the FBI believed, and I swear this is true, they believed that I was the director, secretly the director of the CIA.
Gordon, are you the secret director of the CIA? Come on, level with me.
No, I'm a guy that gets up in the morning, goes online in his pajamas, and then feeds his dog and runs 5 miles. I'm that guy, you know, and that's the guy I am. You know, I'm not running the CIA. They really believe this, and they believed it because they read this online at conspiracy websites, and that's what they now use for intelligence. And no matter how much I denied this, the more I denied it, the more convinced they were it was true.
Right.
And I'm just sitting there, and I'm looking around and saying, what exactly have I done here? Where am I now? Has it come down to this? And this is the same FBI that, pretty much every member of the FBI is not only a Trump supporter, but, and I have worked with the FBI over years, for instance, with African countries, if the FBI wants to get somewhere in Africa.
I think we might have lost you. Hello?
And needing introductions.
Sorry,
which is often the case.
Jim, I think we've lost Gordon somewhere in the mix.
Yes,
and I have worked with defense companies that are heavily financed. So I've worked representing extremely wealthy, powerful groups. For instance, like the families of the United Arab Emirates. I've helped them manage their defense companies, and with that, if you want respect, you can be the front man for Arab oil money, and that's the equivalent of. It's the equivalent of being somebody. Because other than that, I'm the child of a Kentucky coal miner, and my dad was an auto worker, and I grew up in a house pretty much like you'd find in a township in South Africa. Where I'm...
Actually, I never served in uniform. That's why I very always specific say I'm from a very old military family. And I work closely. I'm in several U.S. heritage orgs because my... Mm-hmm. Ancestors fought the British.
Right.
But I'm in these organizations basically out of respect for my family. And as such, I've actually never worked for any U.S. government.
What do you make with a history of military tradition in your family? I mean, what do you guys think? And you are actually a veteran, Gordon. So what do you guys think when you imagine all these soldiers going off to war, if there are soldiers that are being sent to places like Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria, is this a waste of their time? Is this bloodletting? Is this a massacre?
Yes.
On this stuff all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, like when I was I served in the United States Marine Corps in Vietnam. I was an actual special ops guy on the ground. We have war lies. I can pretty much accurately say that I spent 200 consecutive days behind enemy lines. Okay. And like people do in wars,
right.
In a guerrilla war. I mean, this is what I did. 120 pounds, t-shirts and I'm one of the few that actually really did this stuff. When I left for Vietnam in the Marine Corps was very clear explaining that we're not going to lie to any of you. We're on the wrong side in the war. The Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese are patriots. They're fighting for their country. We're on the wrong side. The South Vietnamese government is utterly corrupt. This isn't about communism. The U.S. doesn't belong there. You're going to find that when you get there. And we don't want it to be a surprise. You're military professionals, part of an elite unit, and you're going to fight to survive and get out of there. And this is all we expect of you. And I appreciated this. And while I was there, I mean, I didn't go out of my way to harm anyone I didn't have to stay alive. We treated the people of when you're in a an elite discipline unit isn't rabble. Right. And the U.S. had units there that were rabble. But typically, we got along well with the people there. We would periodically meet the enemy, and we got along well with them, too. And we respected them. These were tough characters. And frankly, we had our tails kicked in that war. And that wasn't easy to do. But it was obvious from day number one that we were in a police state run by maniacs that everyone hated. Everyone hated the South Vietnamese government. Right now, we send people over and I was doing this for $60 a month.
Right.
Right now, we're paying people $8,000 a month we're sending over people who think they're crusaders for Christ against the evils of Islam. They're propagandized all of their lives. When we went into combat, we never had officers. No one was ever over the rank of E4. We moved with light equipment. We had no air support, no artillery. It was small unit guerrilla fighting, like was seen in Africa or Malaysia or whatever. If we're talking Kenya during the rebellion there, mm-hmm. But now it's a military where these guys are on steroids. They get 6,000 calories a day. They have PlayStations. They're calling their moms every other day. They have a
laundry service. They have a laundry service.
You can be arrested in the U.S. military in Afghanistan if you try washing your own clothes because you're cheating Halliburton Corporation, who gets paid $30 a day per soldier per day for washing your underwear. That's the kind of corruption we're dealing with.
No.
In Afghanistan.
Well, our concern is we were on the fake news before a lot of this started. And the political system has basically been neutralized because, as our founding fathers warned us, that we were always going to have to be able to know what our government was really doing, mm-hmm. to be able to have control over it.
Right.
And this is what we've really lost politically, because both sides, the people, and this includes the media now, other than alternative media, corporate media has completely gone over to the dark side. So all of traditional so-called democratic control and represented government is completely neutralized, because the public really doesn't have any way of knowing what's really going on, because it's so bad that if they knew, they would be in such shock, they would all go on antidepressants. And then the other problem is these deep state, really major organized crime people have anticipated that there would be opposition at some point that would try to go after them. And they took a look at every avenue that would be available to go at them and take them down, particularly legally, through the courts and things like this, and being able to prosecute them, banking and whatever. And they've been able to buy their way in, pay people off, and put roadblocks in place where even if a very substantial opposition group came online, every place they tried to go with evidence to take these people down, they would be blocked, particularly in the court system. This is a horrifying situation that we're facing.
So your politics, what I'm reading between the lines, is your politics is no government at this point would be better than any government.
No, it's the question is the battle is, rather than between the political parties, is people have not figured out that they have to unify to basically clean out this major organized crime and take a look at why none of these people can be prosecuted, why mass media will never do any major expose studies on who.
What about Donald Trump? I mean, he's not part of the machinery.
Absolutely. And
he's the center of the machinery and always has been. He's the puppet of he is the most blatant expression of the totalitarian state the U.S. has become. He's reached the point where he puts it in our faces. This guy in the U.S., whatever you guys, if you follow the polls, mm-hmm. we have a president with an approval rating generously in the 40% range, and that's from the day he was elected. This guy's hated in this country, and worshipped by others. But this is not a country full of the brightest folks in the world. I'm a specialist in international and constitutional law. This is also another academic background here. One of those people went to school too long. To understand the U.S., and this is one of these things you don't want to do to a radio audience, but there's this worship of the Constitution as a an end-all document in the U.S. Well, the U.S. has a constitution. Bull. The Constitution was a counter-revolutionary document. The founding fathers of the U.S. didn't write the Constitution. And for anybody, if we have any academics out here, I would refer you to Charles A. Baird's Economic Interpretation of the Constitution. That'd be the 1935 Columbia University Press. Mm-hmm. It was a study done of the Constitution to see who really framed it. And I can put the put Baird, which is the most respected book on the Constitution, I can put it in a sentence or two. If the guys who wrote the Constitution were still around today, they'd be doing time in prison. The Constitution was written by banksters, land speculators, thieves, smugglers, petty criminals. Mm-hmm. When you have a government, we don't elect our presidents. Electors elect our presidents.
Right. There was a lot of confusion about that just last year.
None of us know. None of us know. We have senators who are elected for 6 years. Well, that began in the 20th century. For 140 years, senators were actually picked. You know, what does that mean? They were chosen by, well, no one really knew, but they were picked, like the House of Lords. And then if you look at our House of Representatives, so, and we have states like Wyoming that only have 200,000 people, and states like California with 65 million people, both states have two senators. Mm-hmm. Oh, and yet our Constitution has an equal representation provision in Article 1 that, well, that doesn't seem to be consistent with. If we were to cut to the chase here, when Bush took office in 2001, he began reapportioning our congressional districts, called gerrymandering.
Yes.
And this is putting together congressional districts in such a way that allowed 30% of the population to control the House of Representatives, where all investigations are done. And then in 2005, the Supreme Court, and this is my opinion only, and God only knows, what do I know? But that five members of our nine-member Supreme Court, mm-hmm. until Scalia died, and now it's that way again, are totally controlled by organized crime. You know, Franklin Roosevelt, one of our most respected and beloved presidents, tried to destroy the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is a nasty, nasty piece of work. They stick their nose in anytime, and they essentially work for the great banks of London. And that's not a conspiracy theory. It's where it all comes from. They are members of, and behind the U.S. government, are bizarre secret societies. You know, when Justice Anthony Scalia died with a pillow over his face, was never autopsied, he died while at a meeting of a hunting club called St. Hubertus. And within two hours before he died, he was involved in a dance where he was wearing a goat mask and a red robe, dancing in circles as part of this organization, which is a subgroup of the Bilderberger Group, celebrating the joys of the one-shot, one-kill hunt. And this is the public version of it. That's accepted. I mean, that's the version we've accepted. Behind this, it's, you know, I know enough about these guys to know that they've been involved in pedophile rings and child. And you hear all this talk about pedophile rings in the U.S. all the time, and they really are behind. Washington is a center of this kind of thing. What can I tell you? While working for an American intelligence agency in 1990, I was approached by the White House tied to investigating an attempt to blackmail then President Bush.
Okay.
President Bush had been at a fundraiser in St. Louis, Missouri, and upstairs in the fundraiser there were underage rent boys. And sometimes I was, let's say, fixing at the time, but I was approached by what was then the head of the Republican Party to look into this and to see where this represented a threat to national security. Mm-hmm. And as I began looking into this, we found child trafficking rings that trafficked kids into Washington, and that this was done fairly publicly and behind. It doesn't take you long on the internet to not only find crazy conspiracy theory stuff, but books, interviews, TV documentaries on this exact thing that just kind of falls away as though the problem disappeared. You know, if you were to look at what's going on in the UK over the past few years, where members of government have been cited for being involved in pedophile rings, and of course they're always willing to arrest somebody who's 80 old or no longer popular.
Yeah, you're breaking up kind of badly there, Gordon. Can you hear us?
All this stuff, this is much of the mechanism for controlling what goes on in the governments of the world. When you give people enough power and enough money and enough time on their hands, there are people whose minds run to mischief, who run to things that the rest of us under normal circumstances would never consider. And this is, you know, the powerful Donald Trump. It's grabbing women by the little private areas and going on TV interview after TV interview and sounding like a total idiot for him. But we also have credible information that Donald Trump may have murdered a 12-year-old girl named Mary. He is facing a civil suit for raping a 13-year-old girl. And the cover-up behind this involved an individual, a U.S. attorney, who decided not to prosecute people who would have turned on Trump. And this prosecuting attorney, this very corrupt prosecuting attorney that covered for Trump several years ago, mm-hmm. in something that would have put him in prison for life, is now our Secretary of Labor.
And a lot of Mideast
yes.
money.
And it's...
And the main purpose of it was to balkanize Syria. And they also wanted to, particularly the Qataris and Saudis, wanted to get their oil and gas pipelines through northern Syria so that they could supply, get a pipeline to southern Europe. And the U.S. was interested because they wanted to undercut Russia's growing energy supplies to Europe. Because Russia was using that cash flow, was going to be a very big engine for them modernizing and developing their country and modernizing their military.
All right.
And what they wanted to do is cut in that, get the Saudis and the Mideast barons all that money. And they basically were sure they have a secret agreement that they were bound to basically, no matter what happened, take Assad down. There would be no leader that could step in his place. And then they would literally balkanize Syria under a series of small puppet governors.
Well, there's no such thing as ISIS. ISIS is the Mossad and CIA. I'm oversimplifying, but
okay.
that's you couldn't be any more accurate than that. They were created as a non-state player. There are rumors around here that key ISIS leaders are actually theatrical. I mean, paid actors, and we're not sure that's not true. I mean, it's down to this, but when you're, and I was heading this way before here, and I sort of drifted off on my own because this could go on kind of forever, and by the end of this time, you'll love what we're saying or want to choke us all. But how do you take a jihadist from Indonesia and six people from 65 countries from as far away as Indonesia are fighting as mercenaries for the Saudis and Qataris in Syria? How do you get them to Syria? when I can't get through customs at most airports, I mean, I'm detained all the time. You know, it's just one of those things. If you work for an people want to know, why are you in our country? You know, they want to ask me. But if I were a jihadist, apparently, I'm on a magic carpet. I can bounce through airport after airport after airport, and I can be driven right into Syria and given my guns or a brand new TOW missile from Raytheon Corporation, or even a Stinger missile, heaven forbid, that we used to worry about shooting down airliners. They hand them out like party favors now. All brand new out of the box. How do they get them? How do they get there? How do you get from in? Are they in the belly of a ship somewhere? I don't think so. Are they going through international airports, sitting in the front of planes, eating meals, saying hi to the stewardess, flying into Turkey or Jordan? And if you've ever flown into Turkey or Jordan, you know that they look at everyone that comes. These are where you have to have a visa to go there, where you are questioned and looked at. Even as a tourist going into Turkey, they will question you at the airport. But if you just tell them, I'm a jihadist, but this is not the first airport they went through. How do you fly 300,000 jihadists from around the world into Syria, into Jordan, into bases in Turkey? And these people are from everywhere. They're Koreans fighting there, heaven forbid. How do you do this unless it's done by intelligence agencies or corporations like the Israeli Corporation, IETS, that manages airport security, most airports around the world? We found this, Jim and I, some years ago, whenever there was a in the airport, I kept coming.
Gordon.
Detroit back in 2009.
Yep.
How, for instance, does some guy like Abdullah Mohammed, an unwashed 20-some-year-old with no visa, no ticket, suddenly find himself
in a watch?
Walking through Schiphol Airport. Yeah. Walks right through Schiphol Airport with no visa, no ticket, no passport, and gets himself in first class on a flight to Detroit with a bomb in his pants. You know, now I fly through Schiphol all the time for Detroit, and I've never seen anybody get on a plane without a passport and without a U.S. visa. They will not allow you on the plane. But he was walked on the plane, and two American attorneys watched someone that we identified as a member of India's intelligence agency, the RAW, put this terrorist on a plane with no ticket, no visa, and a bomb, walked him on the plane. And it was seen, and on U.S. television, heaven forbid, the two Detroit attorneys that saw the whole thing watching this. When he got off the when he was arrested and taken off the plane, there were others arrested as well, including an Indian gentleman who was filming him on the plane, was arrested in the airport, taken past all of the passengers who were in a holding area. They all saw it. This individual was never spoken of again. And we have terror attack after terror attack after terror attack where this kind of thing happens. And of course, you know, this is, you know, when we're discussing, you know, the idea of fake news and conspiracy theories, where there is a real conspiracy and a real issue where someone's been caught, like this one. I mean, purely caught. And then, of course, when we looked at him, this kid came from Nigeria. And I work, you know, I have a security contract with Nigeria. His father is a director of Nigeria's military industrial company and a longtime friend of the U.S., of the then U.S. ambassador. And so this, you know, they have strong contacts with the U.S. government. I look at that, and then I begin wondering, but I don't have to put everything together. But when the conspiracy theories hit, suddenly what Jim and I have identified as internet conspiracy websites, and there are hundreds of them, and we have found, we know why we write. I'm an angry guy. You sort of get this. I have a little fun with this too, but I have a background. I come out of this business, so does Jim. But people who have no background, no visible financing, no political beliefs, they fill the internet. Who is Alex Jones, for instance?
Right.
He admitted during a court hearing that he's a paid actor.
Alex Jones?
He admitted this last week. Yeah, he was in a custody battle, and the crazy things he says online were going to be used to deny him custody or even visitation with his own child until his attorneys brought up that, well, Alex Jones, these aren't his ideas. He's a paid actor. We kind of knew this because he has no background in military, politics, international affairs. He's never worked to help anyone. But it's not just him. It's all of them. We go from I think you get it now.
This gets back to when I was trying to find more activist support amongst the officer corps in the U.S. in the Military Order of World Wars, because my father was a World War II fighter pilot. And Gareth, I could find almost no interest by retired military officer corps people in any of the things that we've been discussing today. No interest whatsoever when they saw that it would be controversial, that you would be challenging the system, and you would be looking at a very, very long, tough fight. They were not interested in it whatsoever. We enjoyed
It's fun, and if we've been depressing or we're making people feel helpless, I don't intend to do that.
Yeah.
But
it is what
it is. It's unavoidable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Used to it.
Good. We'll look forward to next time.
Thank you very much. CliffCentral.com.